Welcome to the Wizards of dApps podcast, where we interview the creators of various decentralized applications in the Web3 ecosystem. We learn about how they are built and the insights that come from shipping. And we're your co-hosts. I'm Peter.
And I'm Bethany.
Hey, y'all. We have Drew here. He's from the States. Welcome. So, Drew, we had this interesting scenario a while ago where it's like, I mean, it was Berlin Blockchain Week this August, right? Not long ago, in fact, right? Basically, nearly two and a half months ago, you were there with your Pillar team, right? And, you know, the users of Pillar Wallet actually came through from the States to Berlin. Basically, Pillar Project is a wallet, right? But how the fuck did you get, like, your users to actually travel from the States all the way to Berlin? And we were in an Uber together, right? And I was, like, pretty mind blown. It was basically like pretty mindfucked. I was like, what? You have real users like who are non-crypto people coming to a crypto event? Didn't really register in my head. So how did you trick them to come to Berlin?
What is the secret? Yeah, I mean, we were surprised a bit as well that people were interested in making like that entire trip. The main reason was we were unveiling kind of the first look at some new updates, feature and functionality updates, specifically our smart wallet, which is a smart contract-based account, and the PPN, Pillar Payment Network, our layer 2 solution.
I know you probably have a grander vision of what is, it's a project, not a wallet.
That's a fair statement in that the gray paper, which is like our white paper, and...
Lit. Why gray? Jesus. Why?
Probably because we knew it would fluctuate. You know, we knew it would change. So just by a white paper is typically like, this is our prognosis. And to be honest, I wasn't even involved in the creation or writing of any of that. The real vision was born from David Siegel, one of our founders, who actually wrote a book called Pull, which is about this transition from kind of Web 2 to Web 3, from the read-write web to the semantic web. And this idea of like pulling information versus pushing, more specifically, like you think about what we've accomplished, especially from like an economic or like marketplace standpoint with internet, is we've just really put these stores online and then brought them right up to like next to the consumer. You still have to go in, shop, choose your items, go through that kind of shopping experience. And semantic web is really about trying to empower this more passive commerce and offer kind of situation where, based on your needs and habits, you're naturally, and I guess brand loyalties, even product loyalties, you're served discounts, offers, given, you know, updates on what you might need, etc. So a lot of this also is more about the data and the information sharing piece, what information you need to share with what merchant in order to give them the information they need to like send you a proper offer, how all that's accomplished and how that plugs into like the future of government services and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of this thought around personal data management and self-sovereign identity and what these concepts are. But we realized we had to kind of roll everything back and take first step and build kind of foundationally a wallet first.
Basically, so it's a white paper. Like many other projects, there's this grand vision, but it's like really about where are you today and how are you going to get to it, right? So really, you have this large vision of creating this like, you know, utopian future, basically, right?
Yeah, and which actually kind of goes to this first like point or around how in the world did we get some of our users to go all the way out to Berlin? And Pillar has, since like the beginning, since the ICO, attracted a really passionate community. This idea of, you know, personal data ownership and control and privacy really resonated with them. Some of them completely unaware of crypto, some of them relatively novice in terms of technology in general, but those ideals, those principles are things that are like super important to them. And they see this kind of future, you know, possibilities for both like commerce and decentralized tech. So that has been something that we've relied on and used to help drive both like product vision and really try to get them involved in the conversation in terms of where we're going with direction, keep them up to date with, you know, as we are developing and, yeah, hold them to all the way across the world, basically.
So that doesn't really explain how you managed to build a community of your non-crypto users, right? I mean, it's like different to like other token economies, which I've seen where it's like other tokens basically had a bunch of people who just like wanted to pump a token for profit, right? Pillar did a token sale, right? And it started building out its vision via this wallet, right? The smart wallet, whatever, right? You actually have, around 300 daily active users. You have a community of real people who aren't actually connected to the greater Web3 ecosystem in the typical extent, right? Where, for example, if like people, let's say certain tokens, if you will, you know, token holders would just like have multiple tokens, they pump, they talk about price, they kind of like thrive in this Reddit type environment. Whereas, you know, I met, you know, one of your users, right? One of the users of Pillar Project, right? And she's like this mother. She's a mother and she just like learned about Pillar. And then she just like really aligned with it. And she's just like very enthusiastic and getting involved. How did you create that initial community, right? Or how did Pillar do that?
So it really does go back to the ICO or even like pre-ICO. So David, before this stuff, because of the book he published, and he also had quite a bit of a social media following as well. He kind of already had a bit of a following. He had some success in previous work as well that kind of carried a network that he had. Interestingly, really interestingly, we also got on the radar of this group. If you're familiar with the Webbot or who Cliff High is, Cliff High is a gentleman who kind of created something called the Webbot, and this idea of predictive linguistics. It's kind of a bit of an out there theory, but he basically was able to use a program to scour language online and pick up trends and kind of predict trends. For some reason, Pillar was caught under the attention of this Webbot. And he was actually talking about Bitcoin. He's been doing this for years, like decade plus. I think he's actually slowed it down or even turned it off at this point. But he was talking about this digital currency thing and Bitcoin like way before even. And then when 2017, the ICO craze hit, he started like pointing into different coins that he was picking up language on. Pillar was one of these coins. So there was a huge following that came over from that as well. And a lot of the initial investors were attracted from this, which was really interesting because they came from completely different backgrounds. A lot of people who follow this, again, they're focused on personal privacy. They're focused on personal well-being. They think outside the box generally. They're using the internet to kind of seek what may be truth or explore like alternatives to what you're being fed in mainstream. Like, you know, it's that whole kind of crowd or demographic or appeal. And so a lot of it came from like that as well. A lot of them have continued to stay with us. We actually have like a specific Telegram group that's all Webbot people because like so many of that was like part of our core group. Yeah, really fascinating. And as a result of other YouTube influencers that followed that, they all started talking about us. So we had this interesting like kind of network effect in like right during our ICO, which I think a lot of our success can be attributed to actually, or of the ICO success.
Going backwards, you know, you establish this vision, right, for self-sovereign identity, right? Self-sovereign, like, own data, right? And you built this community. How are you kind of, like, looking to provide them value today? Because it is a big, ambitious vision, right? You have to start somewhere. And it looks like you started with the Pillar wallet. What value are you trying to provide to your community today? What is your value proposition for, you know, other people that you do want to attract to the community?
Speaking to some of the history, I think is important here because so in 2017 ICO, big, huge, grand vision, utopian, even in the way we were trying to reach utopia, right? Doing things like volunteering as the way to get in versus like no actual formal interviews and very interesting practices, flat hierarchy, shared salary exercises, like, you know, it was great for attracting passion around the project and ideals and character, but in terms of critical skill sets, design, development, whatnot, didn't work like that. These people know their market value. You need top notch to do this work successfully. So we management style also challenging. And so we had a couple of false starts in the sense of just like getting the company going. And then as we started to actually get into the meat of it all and really starting to build stuff, we realized that the state of the tech from an industry perspective was still emerging. What kind of infrastructure was available, what we could do. We started to realize the scaling challenges everybody else did, the CryptoKitties moment everybody kind of had. So even if we could create all these tools, and people have, there are like kind of solutions out there for, you can manage all your own identity, you can share verified credentials, have attestations, but there's a saying that goes around on our company. It's like, no one cares about a driver's license. They care about driving a car. The driver's license, yeah, enables one thing, but it's that data being actionable that's actually valuable. Not the fact that you can store it, manage it, and share it. It's like, for what purpose, right? So even like the focus on identity, because of the lack of services or actionable value that could be provided, shifted. So we really started to look more at like the foundational tech, right? The wallet side of things. And then as right away went with key-based wallet move. And then as with everybody else, as industry started to emerge, we're like, this whole moving to smart contracts, storing funds and contracts with keys to access is a much better design. So started to shift these patterns and have a lot of like this year have been focused on like laying a lot of that foundational tech in anticipation of like now integrating services, dApps, and also starting to really implement the token economy and utility around this.
What makes you different to other wallets and why are you better?
From a wallet perspective, it's not really our goal. And being labeled as a wallet it makes sense. It's kind of how we've marketed ourselves up to this point. But the reality is we're trying to do a lot more. And what we're trying to create is essentially, we're in the situation too, where as a wallet and a platform, we actually have a token. So we have like the token economy to consider. Many different like wallets, they don't have that. And for us, that's like a big piece of the puzzle. It's important where we're trying to create an entire ecosystem based around this token or a single token experience, right? So Pillar powers the entire ecosystem and platform and all the value that can be derived. And from a novice perspective, this is potentially really valuable because through meta transactions, you can use Pillar to pay gas. You can use Pillar to deploy your contract on chain. You stake Pillar in our payment network, but because we have a synthetic asset exchange, you can actually transfer balances or exchange value in any other supported token. So if we connect a dApp that's, you know, BAT or Spank or something that they require a different native token, user can actually still draw and only pay from Pillar to play with or try out that service or continue to utilize it. So now combine in personal data management and services and applications and valuable actionable things to utilize that data, we start to create kind of an ecosystem of services and suites that are all available, either natively integrated experiences for some. Others would be just kind of wallet to dApp linked, web or mobile to mobile. And it's kind of like with the smart contract model, you have your bank account where many different kind of services can access and pull from or touch versus having an account for every single one of these things throughout.
It's actually really unclear what you're saying, Drew. Can you like simplify it? Talk to me as if I'm dumb. I almost feel like it'd be great for you to dumb down how you explain things, right? You know, we're not a wallet. We're not trying to be better than other wallets, right? But then like, there's no real clear like line of this is what we're trying to be, right? I feel like you're explaining too much of how it works.
The reality is there's not really a good like term or explanation for exactly what we are creating because it's emergent.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a cop-out, but like, I don't think there's an application like that we're building that's ever been built, frankly.
Because like, to be honest, right, just like hearing how you explain it, it's like, I know what you're working. It's valuable, right? You're actually pushing the boundaries of what it means to kind of actually deliver Web3 to people. You're, you know, progressing on like, you're one of the first wallets, right, to implement smart contract-based designs. You're going deeper into state channels and cross-application authentication via state channels. That's actually really cool tech, but like you're explaining it, and I feel like it's not clear to what is the larger, like, are you looking to help people fully experience Web3 in a safer, more efficient environment, right, et cetera?
This like single token experience is really like, that is that goal.
So you have a token, right? And the goal of that token is to basically help bridge.
In a nutshell, by owning Pillar and using Pillar, you can get exposure to the entire Web3 world. And this is also like cross-chain. Like right now we're very Ethereum focused, whatnot, but like we're Bitcoin support will be hopefully at least early access live by end of the year. Other chains coming in. But yeah, it's like basically as like a novice, I can buy this one token and I can pay for my gas, I can pay for all my experiences, I can pay merchants, I can use other dApps all by like this one thing without actually having to go exchange for other tokens and worry about any of that stuff. The wallet manages a lot of like the financial piece. Identity and DID side will manage how those, the interplay between those two. Personal storage for how managing social connections, social graph.
It's the only wallet I believe that you can chat to people with.
Yeah, we have our own implementation of Signal, so end-to-end encryption, but we're looking to evolve that too, because chat we see is a critical piece.
So I agree, like it's like you don't actually fit into the typical mold. I also think that while it's totally the wrong mental model to think about these like applications, right? They're more gateways, right, for Web3. And, you know, a lot of the wallet like mental model and like the language that's being used really comes from like the ICO hype model of like, oh, just purely looking at Web3 and just crypto as investment vehicle, right? When you look at it like purely through investment lens and payments lens, right? Maybe the term wallet makes sense. On with your iOS app store, right? You don't see like entice a list of all your in-game purchases, to be honest, right? You don't see that. That's not important. It's not relevant, right?
It could work too as it's evolved in the sense like your wallet is holds all your keys, which are your cards, to your accounts, which are like these things that you can pull money from anyways. But like internally, this is something we've really struggled with. Like we've been branded as a wallet because we've kind of advertised ourselves as a wallet. We, at the same time, we're like, should we call ourselves platform, project, ecosystem? How do we even define that? And what is that? Is that even doing it justice? And our users, at the same time, they're like, when Bitcoin, when Litecoin, when Digibyte? And I'm like, guys, having more tokens or currencies on our wallet doesn't actually give you better functionality. It doesn't empower you to like with more services or better thing. It's just, do you really just want to like passively store things on this wallet and that's it? I would be really disappointed as like a token holder and as product owner of this thing if that's all we were looking to accomplish, right? So a lot of the customer mindset's coming from the same thing. They're thinking like, wallet, why doesn't it store all these assets? I'm like, well, we're trying to do more than wallet.
My question would be, do you have kind of a framework or a breakdown on where you focus? So of course, you've got like the wallet infrastructure, but then you've also got the messaging, the chat. So how do you decide what to pursue next? Because I can see how it would be chaotic if you want to do a million and one things. How do you decide what to focus on and what to actually build out or what to like incorporate from others?
It's primarily been driven by need. And that's the reason why a lot of the focus has been placed on foundational tech at this point. Contract account migration, layer two for scaling and like interoperability and merchant layer possibilities. We already have done a ton of exploration around the actual technical solution for how to do identity, and we know which direction we kind of want to take. But again, we haven't pursued that and put resources against it because we haven't seen the value add that will bring directly. And so that time, those resources are better spent on like pushing the needle in other places, right? So it's a constant game of priority. But you're right, we're balancing a lot.
Well, I appreciate the honesty. I mean, it's a dilemma that most people face. I mean, not most people, most projects face, right? It's like, you know, are you a wallet? I mean, that's what people understand, right? That's what people download.
And this is the criticism too, right? I've done interviews with people outside of it and they're like, why does a wallet need a token? That's the kind of like the constant, like, why are all these wallets are like hold way more tokens or like way more currencies? They're ahead of you guys. It's like, well, okay. If that's the criteria by which you want to measure your wallet and that we're defining wallet, that makes sense, I guess. But for us, it's more about like, where can we bring value add beyond just passive storage of assets? We had a lot of people like, you know, we want to do stuff with our tokens. We just want to exchange. We want to sort of like, okay, well, let's start this offers engine, this idea of like passive offers being served to individuals. Tokens and token pricing is just the same thing. So how would we do this, right? Instead of like pushing people out to centralized exchanges, we did an offers engine, which is basically an aggregate of a bunch of different offers from token swaps and DEXs. And based on the criteria in terms of what token or currency and which, how much quantity-wise a user wants, they're served the best ones and they can choose accordingly. And we're integrating with like more and more of those. And what's great is keys stay in the wallet, users in control the whole time. We're kind of trying to push towards that more like DEX approach versus like pushing people to these centralized marketplaces, which it's that peer-to-peer piece we're trying to encourage really too. So like in-app escrow between individuals as well.
From the end user perspective, it makes things a lot easier because if you are new to crypto and you're just getting started, it's like a one-stop shop where you play around here. And then when you want to explore more, it's not like you have to go make an account somewhere else, go register there. You can do it within app. And it makes, I think, exploring a lot easier, makes people more comfortable to explore outside of Pillar.
Taking that a step further too, like with our layer two, you don't even actually have to go into our exchange in the app and exchange for some BAT to go over to BAT to use or whatever. You can actually just keep it in Pillar and try out a service, that synthetic asset exchange piece that we do in the background. If you want to buy that asset to hold it for maybe a speculation interest or like, you know, investment purposes, you can do so. But in terms of just using it, you could stay completely in Pillar. Like if you're actually like buying a token to use, if that is something that were to happen in the future at some point for people.
Would a better description be it's a super app?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, there's people who are like that Chinese, like WeChat type approach.
I mean, it's all about, you know, basically providing a common shit payment rail, right? Which seems to be Pillar, and you provide various services, right, on that payment rail. You aggregate attention, you provide more services, the behavior cycles, you know, repeat, and people gain more and more value. Is that what you're aiming for, essentially?
Yeah. I mean, my ideal, and I speak for myself, I would love for this to really be a project, and Pillar to be a project in the sense of like community-owned and driven. And they're directly involved in helping to drive product direction. They're sharing in the earnings of all this is all possible. It's just like things that we would need to explore. And the reality is getting this thing off the ground and kind of moving and then allowing the through a DAO or some other way participation in governance and allowing users to, you know, direct product direction. We already do a pretty good job of that, but in an actual more like formalized way, direct specific way, we can do these things. And I would love to see basically Pillar then kind of takes on this, the next partnership they pursue or integration they're looking to do. So we're constantly just cobbling on new dApps, supporting, working with new partners, and everybody's kind of participating in success. You're encouraged both in like fiscally and also from like a user experience standpoint to be involved in this ecosystem and to see it thrive, essentially. So yeah, I mean, the how would be relatively easy of that stuff.
Being seeing a lot of like projects call themselves DAOs and talk about community governance, it's a lot of theater. Taking a step further, right? You know, rev share with your users is different because you're rewarding them for being part of the product, vice versa, right? And the interesting thing is, like, if you actually align incentives of users with the product and the company, you can actually probably experiment with business models and more like liberally, basically, right? Because you're helping the users and incentives are aligned, right? It's not just the company reaping, you know, profits off users who are essentially the product, right? I think like a lot of projects talk about community owned and community run, right? And they talk about like distributed governance in a way. You know, a lot of the users don't give a shit about governance. It's a responsibility. Why would you give your users more responsibility in their life? You know, it makes zero sense. It's like, well, maybe some users want responsibility, but give them the option. And perhaps make it default, simply reward them.
We've done this pretty like effectively too, I feel, in that. So one of the kind of standouts from what we have in our wallet and on our platform against other solutions is a 24/7 live support, which allows our users to have basically like, there's always someone there to help them through things. And that's evolved into also becoming this, we basically have a place they can go and vote, suggest new features, and then other people can vote up or down accordingly. So there's kind of this consensus going on in our support as well of people saying like, we really want this as like a next feature. And if you really want to get involved and take responsibility, there's our ambassador program, which is like our evangelized, really passionate. And these are the people who've Berlin, they actually move the needle. We're going to empower them. We're going to be giving them their own budgets, experimenting with some of the DAO stuff there versus like project-wise first, right? And letting them to kind of run their own essentially experiments, but will actually have an impact on the product as well and the project.
You seem to have mentioned like a lot of different things that are coming up. What are your next milestones, I guess, is my question.
So we're currently early access testing, which is available to anybody. You just opt in from the wallet, our smart wallet and payment network. There's a lot of moving pieces right now, which all kind of play into each other, but we're looking to pull that into production, I would say it's like the latest beginning of the year. And the reason we're postponing some of that, even though it might be ready from a technical standpoint, is we got some really good UX feedback around using these things and the trickiness of having a key-based wallet and now this smart contract wallet and the payment network possibly being its own transaction layer. So there's all these kind of like, where do I use what for what? Working through a lot of that. We're also implementing a referral program. So users who invite other Pillar users will receive, and then the person who creates a new account will receive. That Pillar can be used to deploy contracts for new users who go straight into the smart wallet. We have like a big kind of push coming, a bunch of this stuff rolled out at once, along with like a marketing push with it. I would say beginning of the year, all this stuff will be production live, including like our meta transactions. So everything will be paid for or is possible to be paid for in Pillar. We're starting to work on the 2020 roadmap now. And next year is going to be a lot more focused on integrating dApps and pulling in those, the connection between your smart contract can now be the account that powers all these different dApps. Some are natively integrated. And then also really focused on the identity layer. We're finally going to be getting into that. And we have some interesting ideas about how to make that, again, an actionable, valuable piece of the
I think that's a big role as well as it can play. It's just like aggregating, you know, users and attention. And then basically working with dApps to kind of like distribute that, right? That's what wallets should probably focus on right now, right? As like these dApps increasingly become more useful and become viable as a product to kind of put in front of users, right? The big dilemma of like the last year or so is just like the ICO boom basically exploded. Investing in ICOs were no longer that big of a use case, right? And all of these wallets were basically like, hey, what is our use case now, right? And there aren't any really useful dApps or entertaining ones out there anyway. So there was like a bit of a limbo phase, right?
Still is, yeah.
I would argue that, you know, we're seeing some interesting products emerge, especially in DeFi. I mean, you know, Argent's been experimenting with that, right? I guess with OnToken, they've been experimenting with giving exposure to various games like Decentraland, right? And MakerDAO, basically, right, as well. Just interesting to see where that goes.
That's going to, I think, be a big piece of this. I mean, you could even see in the future as like many of these options, and we kind of have like a services list of all the different like supported dApps that you can interface with through your smart wallet. Some sort of TCR, in-wallet TCR emerges in terms of like the most common, right?
Right. I mean, Status right. is yeah. doing that, right? As example. Yeah.
The number of usable or interesting dApps, valuable dApps at this point is... they're emerging, but DeFi has found it's kind of old, but and we have our users starving for that stuff too, right?
It'll just be interesting to see how these things unfold in 2020 with like people's new roadmaps, maybe refocusing and stuff.
Right. Agreed.
I think that about wraps things up today. Thank you so much for talking to us, Drew, and being so honest about everything. I think the listeners will appreciate that.
It's true. It's like a real narrative and like it's a real problem for both us and the industry. And I have like no qualms basically like talking, you know, hitting it head on and like discussing because there's a lot of challenges. And in our particular case, right, tokenomics are at play, identity is at play. So a lot more to offer.
I really appreciate just like sharing your honest opinions, thoughts, right? Where can we find out more about you?
Pillarproject.io, obviously, for the project, myself, at Drew Harding, Pillar, at Burning Fiat, Telegram.
This has been Wizard of Dapps. We'll talk to you next time.
If you enjoyed what you listened to and are interested in supporting this podcast, then please follow us on Twitter at Wizard of Dapps. The show notes will be on our website, and if you want to continue the conversation, join our Telegram group. All links will be in the episode description. Thanks for listening.